Support comes from St. Louis Public Library Foundation, helping the library serve children and their families with programs and services needed to become lifelong readers. More information about the foundation is at slpl.org.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. It was 1988 when Robert Cohen took his first professional job as a photographer with the Florida Times Union. Robert's career brought him north to St. Louis, where he spent the last 25 years with the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. In that time, he's captured iconic images of the Cardinals winning the World Series and protesters in the streets of Ferguson. He's been nominated for and won a Pulitzer Prize. If you've noticed his byline, you could very well believe that he has been everywhere, talked to everyone, and probably taken their pictures too. Here to reflect on that career and the people whom he encountered behind the lens, I'm joined by Robert Cohen. Robert, welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Thanks so much.
So let's go back to that beginning and your start at the Florida Times Union. What was that first job like?
Actually, my first job was at the Sun-Tatler in Hollywood, Florida.
Oh, okay.
And we were sandwiched right in between two powerhouse newspapers, the Miami Herald and the Sun Sentinel in Fort Lauderdale. And so it was during the big newspaper wars of the 70s and 80s. And so we were a little newspaper, 20,000-ish circulation, and we competed with the big guys who were north and south of us. And it was just a remarkable training ground. I couldn't have asked for a better first job ever.
Yeah. What kinds of images were you looking for at that time, especially as you've described, sandwiched between two giants?
Right. So what was really interesting about our newspaper is that we were hyper-local. We were only local. We did not publish any wire photos on our front page, no national, international stories on our front page. Everything was local. And the reason for that was not only we were in a small community, but most of our subscribers got our paper, plus they got either the Miami Herald or the Sun Sentinel. Mm. And so that was their outlet for national and international news, and we were all local. And
yeah.
Very, very small staff, three photographers, one picture editor, and a few reporters.
Okay. So what was it that a photographer at that time had to do to get their photos in the paper? You can take the photos, whether they get into the paper is another story, right?
Right, right. This was the years of black and white photography. And we did our photo assignments. We came back and developed our film by hand and printed it by hand and brought the prints out to the desk editors who were designing the pages. And it was a very step-by-step process. And I enjoy kids these days, or young photographers these days. You know, they're looking for their wire. You know, where's the Wi-Fi? And
okay.
and back then it was, you know, if we covered a high school football game, we'd stay for about a quarter. Mm-hmm. We'd rush back to the paper. We'd develop the film. And when we printed the film was usually still wet. We didn't have time to dry it.
Okay.
So quick, and make a print and run it out to the sports desk.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how it was.
So how did that then affect the way that you took your pictures? I mean, there's the whole process that you had to go through in order to produce the photograph. But when it came to being out in the field and taking the photographs, what effect did it have on that?
Well, you had less time because of deadlines. Now, if we were working on a story, a long-term story that was going to maybe run in a couple of weeks, then we had time. But most of the time, it was a very quick turnaround. We didn't have a whole lot of time in the field. And then had to come back and run to a dark room. If we were traveling, if we were doing maybe a college football game out of town, our hotel room became our dark room. And we would get there early. We would tape off the bathroom so light couldn't get inside.
Oh, okay.
And we would set up all of our developing and printing equipment in a bathroom in a hotel.
Yeah.
And did that for many years.
Right. So if we fast forward then to a photo that you have become very well known for, and it is a photo that was part of the collection that won the Post-Dispatch a Pulitzer Prize in 2015, it is this photograph of Edward Skeeta Crawford. Can you describe this photo for us, Robert?
Yeah. So for someone who's not seen it, it's a young man kind of coming out of a cloud of tear gas and picking up a canister and throwing it back at, you know, toward the police. Mm-hmm. He's got long dreadlocks, and he's got a bag of chips in his hands, and it's a fleeting moment.
Mm-hmm.
There's much about the picture that I didn't actually even know existed until I actually looked at it on the laptop to scan it to send it to the paper.
Right.
And so I didn't know he had a American flag shirt on. I had no idea he had chips in his hands.
Yeah. And chips, St. Louis.
Yes.
Red hot ripplets.
Red hot ripplets.
Yeah.
Indeed.
When you saw this photograph, and you're describing this happening, it was at night, and you had tweeted about it at 1:18 a.m. How did it feel to see what was coming out on your laptop screen? You don't have to develop that film the way that you described in a bathroom or anything like that. But, I mean, what was it? What was the feeling that you had looking at this image?
Yeah, I honestly, I didn't have a lot of reaction at the time because I was trying to get the picture to the paper before deadline.
Mm-hmm.
We had pushed during Ferguson coverage, we'd pushed our deadlines very, very late. And this picture almost made it to the paper for the next day, but didn't.
Mm-hmm.
But consequently, I'm editing very quick. I'm working on my trunk of my car.
Yeah.
The trunk is closed. The laptop's on top. I'm editing, trying to pick the best picture, a quick tone, a quick caption,
mm-hmm.
and sending it on its way. Later, as a couple hours went by, I started understanding it a little bit more. I started looking at it a little bit more,
mm-hmm.
and I figured it could be something that might have some resonance with readers.
Right. So you did have a sense then?
I had a little bit of a sense.
Okay.
I wouldn't say I had a huge sense.
Mm-hmm.
I tweeted the picture. I eventually made it home, and it wasn't until the next morning, after my wife and I got our kids to school in the morning,
mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until I came back from dropping kids off at school that I actually opened up my Twitter feed, and it's like, wow.
Yeah.
It was just unreal, the response.
Yeah, and the responses among those, was there something in particular that really stood out to you, or was it just the sheer volume of the responses that you got?
It was the volume. I mean,
mm-hmm.
it was remarkable to me. I've never had any picture that had this type of response.
Mm-hmm.
It had a life of its own.
Yeah.
It started showing up across the country on billboards and sides of buildings, and it just took on a life of its own. Within 24 hours on the streets of Ferguson, people were selling T-shirts with that image on it.
Right.
And so
I remember that time too.
Yeah.
You got to talk with Edward Crawford later because you did not know him at the time you took that photograph. What was it like to speak with him?
It was great to finally meet him. It took a little while to find him. We certainly started looking on social media to try to get help,
mm-hmm.
for us to find him. Eventually, he agreed to sit down and talk to us. I think he was, at that point, he was arrested after this photo was taken in the moment. It
mm-hmm.
didn't, not like he was arrested a few days later. It was in the moment. And I think he was a little bit concerned about meeting with us. And
mm-hmm.
so he met with us with his lawyer, and we had a good conversation. He was a great guy.
I mean,
I spent a fair amount of time with him over the next couple years, and he had a family. He mostly worked in as a server in restaurants,
mm-hmm.
and he was, just out there hustling,
making
money. Yeah.
Now, tragically, Skeeta As he was known, Skeeter Crawford's life ended on May 4th, 2017. And our producer, Danny Wisentowski, spoke with his mother, Cynthia, last year. She said that the image of her son showed his courage to protect the people around him from the tear gas.
He really didn't get treated like a celebrity. He went on to try to do his day-to-day life, you know. He
take care of his
take
children.
Take care of his kids, go to work.
Right.
Come home. I mean, it bothered him to the point where it just, you know, he know in his heart that he wasn't trying to hurt an officer. He didn't know what the outcome would be. But I stood behind my son. And I still, every, on his birthday, I wear the flag shirt. The flags. I got a flag in my house. I got a flag, you know, just remembering that we do live in America. And I guess with that picture, stand up for what's right.
That was Cynthia Crawford and the voice of Edward Sr., Skeeter's father. They're reflecting on the life of their son, Edward Skeeter Crawford. Edward was the subject of a Pulitzer Prize-winning photograph that showed him throwing a tear gas canister during the Ferguson protests. And that photo was taken by the person we're talking with today. That is photojournalist Robert Cohen. He recently retired after 25 years at the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. And the photos that he took, including the one that we've just spoken about of Edward Skeeter Crawford, helped the paper win a Pulitzer Prize in 2015 for its coverage of the Ferguson protests. As you hear what Cynthia has just shared about what the photo means, about standing up for what is right, what comes to your mind, Robert?
I mean, as a journalist, it's you know, my opinion is not all that important, but yeah, I mean, what really resonated with people, I think, more than anything else, was just the shirt he was wearing. Mm-hmm. That if my memory corrects, it was his mother's shirt, or maybe it was his mother's socks. I'm trying to remember.
Okay.
It's been a little while.
Yeah.
But he borrowed them that night, and mm-hmm. and that's, I mean, that's what really spoke to people was the shirt.
Mm-hmm.
The action to somewhat, in some degree, but it's a picture that spoke to people like nothing else I've ever photographed.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah.
Moving to something that is a little more, or a lot more, a little lighter, right? In September of 2022, you had the opportunity to travel to Los Angeles, and you were there because you were photographing a game between the St. Louis Cardinals and the LA Dodgers, and Albert Pujols was two home runs away from 700. And if that happened, you had a 10 p.m. deadline to get your photos in. Now, what followed, of course, was Pujols hitting two home runs, and the second happened at 10:22, which was way after your deadline. And you've described what happened next, Robert, as an example of the, quote, daily miracle of newspapers. Why was that a miracle? And how did you get your photos in the paper the next day?
Yeah, it was a mind-wrenching experience. we don't, you know, The St. Louis Post-Dispatch has, you know, is still proud to say that we have a reporter at every Cardinals game, whether it's in St. Louis or on the road, and I believe we are still the only ones that do that, at least for the Cardinals.
Mm-hmm.
So this was an 8-game road trip I was assigned to, and just looking for 700 to get there, and we finally got to Los Angeles after. Nothing happened the first three games in San Diego, except beautiful sunshine. When we finally got to Los Angeles, I quickly discovered my normal way of working is to work in what they call the photo wells, which is where the photographers are.
Mm-hmm.
And we work on our laptops and we send pictures during the game. And it's a very quick process. And one of the first things I heard is that we don't allow laptops in the in the photo wells, so therefore I had to work in the media workroom, which is just right behind home plate. You go through a gate and you're in the media workroom. So so when he hit 699, the only time you can move out of your position is at the half-inning break. And so I went through the gate. I got to the media workroom. I sent the 699 pictures that were he hit that right before 10 o'clock, just a few minutes before 10 o'clock. And, and so I'm sending those pictures, and the game's still going on. And I think I've got a little bit of time because he's not going to hit another one in the same night, is he? And I look up. There's a television monitor in the workroom. And I look up, and I see Tommy Edmonds up to bat. And I freaked out because Pujols follows Edmund, and I'm sitting in the workroom. And so I run out with my camera. I get to the gate, but the gate's not opening because it only opens at the half inning.
Okay.
So I'm standing there. I'm kind of freaking out. I'm going to have to take pictures through a fence or a gate. And next thing you know, divine intervention, the manager calls a pitching change. And so the gate was able to open. So I ran back to my spot. And shortly later, he hit 700. It was, you know, he hit it about 10:20, 10:22, which was past our 10 o'clock deadline. But we did have a little bit of contingency playroom to try to get, you know, this was important for the paper. This was really important for the readership. And so we got it when we got it. And we sent those pictures as quickly as possible, and ends up we had I believe they delayed the presses about 45 minutes to actually print the paper.
Okay.
And so, you know, hopefully it got to as many people as it could. I don't know if it got to everybody.
Well, and these images, we see Pujols running. He's very much in motion. So it captures the energy that was there. And there are two photos there, actually, and there was a special section page with a vertical photo, so you see his whole body, and then a horizontal one on the inside where he's got his arms open, like he is embracing everyone who is there and embracing this victory. Is that something that you also were feeling?
I had never, I mean, I photographed Pujols for several years through a couple World Series, and I had never seen that level of emotion from him, except when they won the World Series previously.
Yeah.
And so you could see that, you know, it was happiness that I'd never seen from him before outside of a World Series, but it, you know, it was also, I think it was relief from his face, because there'd been a lot of pressure, and this had been talked about for weeks and weeks and weeks. Mm-hmm. And so I was hoping it was going to happen in the eight games I was covering, but I'm glad for him that it happened.
Right. Well, we've covered some range in the photography that you've done, and you've also talked about the differences in technology. Photography has changed a lot over the last, you know, 37 years or so. Are there things that you miss or maybe mourn losing, like, you know, film cameras, Kodachrome?
I miss the... the time we used to be able to spend on stories was more, but I don't miss the darkroom. Back in the old days when you actually had to print as well as develop film, it was messy, a lot to clean up, a lot of chemicals, a lot of stink. Then we evolved and we just had to do the film, and then we would scan the film. Mm-hmm. And so there's no longer printing, but, I don't miss the darkroom much, but at the time when we switched to digital cameras, the quality was just horrendous, and now it's fantastic.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't ever think about shooting film again.
Well, I know that you're kind of sort of retired, but I hope to see some more of the work that you do in your off time, and maybe as you travel.
Thank you. I will be around. I'll probably freelance a little bit, but I'll be around.
Okay. Robert Cohen is a Pulitzer Prize winning photographer who spent 25 years of his almost four decade career taking photos for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Thank you so much for joining us today, Robert.
Thanks for having me.
This episode was produced by Danny Wisentowski.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri, St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.